Hello, everybody. This is Scott Yates, Director of Communications and Producer Relations for the Washington Grain Commission, here with episode 186 of Wait All About It, or what I'm calling Joe Sowers, Our Man in Manila, about my conversation with the U.S. Wheat Associates Regional Vice President for the Philippines and South Korea. U.S. Wheat Associates is the export arm of the American wheat farmer, and Sowers is the man most directly responsible for servicing both the Philippines and South Korean markets. If you know anything about Pacific Northwest wheat exports, you know the Philippines has been the number one buyer of the region's flagship soft white wheat crop for 4 years running. South Korea is no slouch either, ranking third, with Japan coming in at the number two position. Because the Philippines is our number one market for soft white, not to mention Sowers is based in Manila, I'm limiting this podcast to his observations about that country. Sowers refers to the Philippines as a population market as opposed to a consumption market, meaning that the rising demand for wheat is fueled by a rising population. As you'll hear ahead, the country has a lot of people crowded into a not very large space. Its location near the equator, meanwhile, makes it a spot where caloric output demands fueling the body many times a day. Wheat-based snack foods are part of that fuel. And it doesn't hurt that the Philippines' GDP has risen more than 80% since Sowers arrived nearly a decade ago. Regular listeners may recall grain market analyst Mike Krueger from episodes 179 and 180 when he extolled the work done by overseas employees of U.S. Wheat Associates, conceding it was work he couldn't do. And Krueger was speaking of a time before COVID-19 upended the world. As you'll hear ahead, lockdown in the Philippines on account of the virus has been much more severe than in the U.S. Over the last few months, there have been few exceptions for Sowers' family of four to even leave the house. The Philippines has been an important market for Pacific Northwest wheat farmers for decades, but it is only within the last decade it rose to the level of being our premier customer. I can't be certain, but I think the aid that U.S. wheat farmers provided Philippine millers through U.S. Wheat Associates, which helped end the dumping of Turkish flour into the country, went a long way to cement our relationship. You'll hear more about that success story ahead. Sowers was in the state on vacation with his wife and children when I talked to him as he quarantined at his wife's family home in Connecticut on June 19, 2020. I ask him to set the scene by charting the evolution of U.S. wheat into the Philippine market.
The Philippines has long been a top market for soft white wheat, top four or three, but it really shot up in the recent 5 years or so. And the reason for that, in my opinion, is what I call a population market versus a consumption market. In the Philippines, we have a huge population. We have a third the population of the United States in the land area of Arizona, so very dense. But we consume very little wheat per capita. Our per capita consumption of wheat 5 or 6 years ago was 23 kilos per person. And that compares to someplace like Kazakhstan, which is about 10 times that, 250 kilos per person per year. That's for every man, woman, and baby child. So a population market versus consumption. Then we also enjoy an extremely strong market share. We do in the high 90% market share. So 97, 98% market share. Been cooking along like that for several years. And then we had a sudden change in the GDP growth in the Philippines. We started enjoying 6 to 7% gain in GDP, and that added to disposable incomes. So then you have this huge population, this really strong market share, and all of that, then all of a sudden, consumption increased by on the order of 50%. So we went from 23 kilos to 32. You see a huge gain in exports from the U.S. into the Philippines, and we shot up to number one buyer of soft white wheat, number one buyer of hard red spring wheat. In a decade, we've added about 70% to our imports of soft white wheat. We're now importing nearly 50 million bushels soft white. It's pretty extraordinary growth.
And it's all happened since you've been there, Joe.
Yeah, I think I got lucky.
All right. So what is all that soft white wheat being used for in the Philippines?
We have huge, huge consumption of snack cakes and biscuits, otherwise known as cookies and crackers. That's really strong there. Those are your normal products that you'll see soft white wheat in and around the world. But we also see it in pasta, which is an unusual use for soft white. And we also blend some into bread applications in the Philippines, lots of snack food. So many uses for soft white.
Okay, so I understand that the Filipinos have a sweet tooth. Does that explain some of the popularity of soft white, which is used in a lot of confection type applications?
It probably does. That's as good a theory as any. We in the Philippines typically get our wheat food consumption in between meals, our mid-meal snacks. So we eat about six times a day. And in those mid-meal snacks, we'll eat something on the cookies or crackers or pasta, some wheat-based food. And that's when we get our consumption. To your question about eating a lot of sugar, burn so quickly, they need to eat often. And that's why we get so many meals. And then we get the consumption of wheat-based foods in between them.
Now, does their bread have sugar in it as well? I mean, a higher amount of sugar than the U.S. would?
In the Philippines, we include about 17 to 20% sugar in our bread applications, and that compares to 4% in the U.S., so quite a bit sweeter.
Wow, interesting. Can U.S. Wheat Associates take some of the credit for the increased use of soft white, or is it just all an economic equation?
Well, on the economic side, the soft white wheat producer has a lot of advantages. You grow your wheat right on the banks of a river. You can run the product down the river very cheaply. That's made it very cheap and cost competitive in the Philippines. But I think U.S. wheat can take a lot of credit for it. It's just the longevity in the market, investing in the end product manufacturers. Now, Filipino consumer really wouldn't accept a product made out of anything else. So ingrained it is in the psyche or in the diet of the Filipino, which is tremendous. And I think a lot of that goes back to 60 years we've been in the Philippines. Western Wheat Associates started an office in Manila in 1961. And those were the PNW farmers that saw the importance of investing in those markets. And it's really paid off for them 59 years later, as you can see.
Absolutely. I understand they even call some of their products American, don't they?
Some of our formulations are, on the bags or on their labeling that it's an American recipe or whatnot. And in fact, a lot of the end product manufacturers are even putting U.S. wheat on their labeling, on their bags, to tell people that they're, to inform their consumers, they're using high quality inputs.
All right. As someone who has lived and worked in the Philippines for almost a decade now, I imagine your knowledge and experience and appreciation for doing business there has evolved. Can you describe your unfolding understanding of the market for wheat there?
Well, after 9 years in the Philippines, I sure hope I have a more nuanced understanding of the market. The Philippines is a very dynamic market. It's a dynamic situation. So the recent coronavirus situation really changed my perspective on so many things. I learned so much. I was very surprised when, for example, that bread in the bakery segment stayed so stable and so strong, despite the fact that the per capita income and disposable incomes were dropping precipitously. So every day I learn something new, and I try to take that perspective into it, a beginner's perspective, in that it's the first time I've seen it and learn from it, not use my own preconceived notions.
Well, how have you been dealing with the COVID-19 pandemic? Have you been forced to work virtually? And what does that virtual work look like?
That's a good question. We in the Philippines, we had a very harsh lockdown. One person was allowed to go to the store once a week. So you have your four walls as your friend and your whole family inside. And that's how it was for 10 weeks. And even up to now, 3 months later, the kids really aren't even allowed outside. So you can see what that would have done on a personal level. But as far as the work goes, we were very productive over this period. We, as part of our contract with the USDA to get some funding from them, are mandatorily must do some sort of evaluation every so often. So we took this opportunity to evaluate some of our programs in the Philippines. So we hired a consultant out of the United States, and they've been interviewing in the Philippines. And those interviews are spanned for maybe a half an hour long. 20 millers from 14 different companies responding to this interview request. It's amazing. Learning about basically how we can help the industry recover. The idea is what can we do as U.S. Wheat Associates as we evolve from the coronavirus to help the industry regain that strong growth it was seeing before. Up of the 20 millers we spoke to, we had 40 or 45 bakers. And this is a lot of work that goes into discussing these issues with them. And it's I think it goes to show how they are so interested in what U.S. Wheat Associates can provide them.
All right. You have a master's degree in agricultural economics, Joe. What didn't your degree prepare you for in real life there in the Philippines?
My perspective of education isn't really that it should prepare us for the real life, but just give us a smattering of ignorance, if you will. Give us a little tidbit of information to know studies exist and where to go to follow up on them. The real education that I feel like helped me in my career was my first job with an economic consulting firm called IHS Market, now after several iterations. But that first 5 years of learning about how to manage the data, how to present information to people in a believable, objective, and transparent way.
Well, has it helped you to have that economics degree?
I think so. I think ability to quantitatively analyze something is incredibly important. I think a master's degree in agricultural economics is incredibly useful, again, to discuss numbers in a way that is compelling and objective and believable. I think it's so important. And that's really how I see my role in the Philippines now, is to discuss that with the buyers and the mill owners and the end product manufacturers to help describe the situation in a way that they will believe. Because have the numbers behind you and you can't present them, well, then you're just talking. Give them mm-hmm. the numbers and show them the graphs. I think it's incredibly helpful.
Yes, yes. And in Spokane in January, Neda Albora, I believe that's how you pronounce her name, she gave a presentation during the Pacific Northwest Wheat Quality Meeting in which she used a number of your slides. For those who didn't listen to the podcast, she's director of flour sales for Universal Robina Corporation, which is a piece of JD Summit Holdings, which is a huge multinational corporation. But I was just fascinated that all of that started with milling. Can you speak to how at least some of today's multinational corporations in the Philippines owe their success to U.S. wheat?
Such a good question. And I completely agree that Naida is an incredibly dynamic personality. Her presentation, I understand, was very well received. And she is she's a star in the Philippines for sure, as is URC. They're the fourth largest milling concern in the Philippines, and now they own banks and shopping centers. And I think a total valuation of JG Summit is something on the order of $50 billion with a B, USD. So pretty amazing success story coming from the Gokong Wei family there since the 1950s. But so many of our mills are widely focused in the food segment. That's probably the majority of our companies. And if I might just reword your question, rather than that they have their success is based on their relationship with U.S. Wheat, I would say U.S. wheat farmer success is based on our relationship with them. Because they have been so successful, and their success has led to such strong sales for U.S. wheat farmers.
All right. Does everyone speak English in the Philippines?
It's very widely spoken. You have to go pretty far down the socioeconomic ladder to find someone that's not very fluent.
Okay, I understand that their indigenous language is called something like Tagalog.
Right, Tagalog is the local Filipino language, but there are actually 184 dialects. That's the official number. And by a dialect, this is probably considered another language because Cebuano in the south actually has a distinct vocabulary. And in fact, the population speaks that southern language of Cebuano. So it's an interesting dichotomy. And there's so many languages. It's interesting to think about learning them.
Yeah. All right. So a few years ago, Turkey was shipping flour, finished flour, into the Philippines for less than domestic mills there could grind flour. It was a big deal at the time, but we don't hear much about that anymore. Why not?
Well, that's largely because the U.S. wheat farmer invested in helping the Filipino miller gain anti-dumping protection from those Turkish flour imports. In 2014, we assisted the Filipino miller at anti-dumping protection, and now as high as 17% tariff went on those flour imports, and that has really caused a huge decline in interest in the Turkish flour. Incidentally, we are extending that, or attempting to. When we signed it in 2014, when it passed, I never thought I would still be in the Philippines needing to extend it, and in fact, here I am. And it's been delayed due to the coronavirus, but we are looking, speaking with the lawyers as of now to extend those tariffs for another 5 years.
All right. So what are the challenges you see on the horizon there in the Philippines?
So many. I'm always seemingly pessimistic this time of year with hearing about the big crops coming off in the Black Sea and Australia. It always makes me nervous. I mentioned that they've been under a lockdown for essentially 3 months, that they still don't have public transportation, which is how people move around to go to work. So these people are not able to work, not able to earn. We, as an industry, keep consumption up at these sky-high levels that we've seen. And I think that's going to be a huge concern for us. And will the miller be enticed to decrease their input raw material costs and thereby lowering the value of their products? I think these are my biggest concern moving forward.
You've mentioned a little bit about the personal impact of COVID-19. I'm just curious, how has your life and that of your wife, and you have two children, right? How has that all changed?
Wow. Well, I think it's been good in some respects, in that life goes so fast and you're always traveling, and that's really gave us a chance to get to know each other. But sometimes there's too much of a good thing. My daughters are 7 and 9, and they've been cooped up inside the house. It's been an emotional time for everyone, but their schools are closed and likely to be closed probably longer than in the U.S. We'll probably remain out of school and on this distance learning from the apartment, which is challenging because that really shifts a lot of the educating responsibilities to parents. And my wife picks up more of those responsibilities than I do. But it is a challenge for the entire family, for sure.
Fascinating, fascinating. What do you like best about being an American working overseas?
Well, I like kids see a different perspective of the world, learn to see some new places, understand that other people exist. That's been pretty great. As far as the American aspect of that question, I think I'm really proud of representing U.S. wheat farmers. I'm somebody that's respected abroad. It's almost patriotic in some respects. So I love that about being an American expat.
And what do you like least about being an American working overseas?
Well, this year has probably been the definition of what I like least, is the position that we're all in, especially so very far away. When there's a pandemic floating around, you're worried about catching a cough from someone on the planes. The other part, I think, is countries are put to their breaking point. They really want to use any of their resources for immigrants, which I guess you would say I am. Those aspects are negative. I don't know if they would relate to being an American, because I think in the Philippines especially, Americans are respected as much or more than anyone else. So it's not a problem to be an American, but just being an expatriate in this environment.
Is there anything that the American farmer, the members of U.S. Wheat Associates, can do to ensure that the Philippine market remains strong?
I never go to Washington Grain with an idea that's not supported. And I think that that's been has been great. It's a great part of my job satisfaction to have so much support from the U.S. Farmers. For example, the chairman, Gary Bailey, sent out some messages to the millers in Korea and the Philippines to express his appreciation for their business. I think that's always very much appreciated. And I think it's just good to know that you're there if and when we need you. For example, with the Turkish flour incident, I think Washington Grain was the biggest support we had in that endeavor. Incidentally, I had the honor of meeting Kathy McMorris Rogers on that activity that helped us work for from the U.S. for that dumping tariff. The millers in the Philippines felt very supported. So I think continuing that legacy of support is so important.
I think Sowers is being modest when he says he got lucky to be sent to the Philippines when the market was ready to rise. A rare bird, Sowers can crunch numbers and have fun doing it. In fact, from the presentations I've seen him give, he makes promoting U.S. wheat enjoyable, educational, and entertaining for everyone. The legacy of support from American wheat farmers to the Philippine milling industry that Sowers talked about continues today. As you heard, the Washington Grain Commission was at the forefront of efforts to disrupt the Turkish flour dumping. Working together with all of our partners leverages the Grain Commission's influence and prestige around the world. I hope you enjoyed episode 186, or what I entitled, Joe Sowers, Our Man in Manila, about my conversation with the U.S. Wheat Associates Regional Vice President for the Philippines and South Korea. Please join me here again next week for another episode of Wheat All About It.
We are all children of a special treat, a miracle of nature that we just call wheat. A crop that's in the Bible, a crop that's in our bread, a crop that's filled our bellies and held us in good stead. Through a history of starvation and times of want and woe, wheat has been our savior, our grub, our glue, our dough. There's always lots of problems when we have enough to eat, but there's only one dilemma when it's not enough wheat. We feed you.